brach of the mesa. And the issue of the brachas. Parshas told us in particular in the relationship of Yaakov and Yitzchak and Rivka raises like two very interesting psychological observations about family dynamics. One observation is the Mitzvah's observation. I think we mentioned it last week. He posits there's a fundamental difference in the way that Avraham Avinu related with Sarah when they had problems with their children, and the way Yitzchak relates to Rivka. That Sarah was able to confront and to directly speak to Avraham about a problem with their child. And Avraham didn't want to send away Ishmael, but if you remember, Avraham did send away Ishmael. Yitzchak, on the other hand, Rivka could only be able to do subterfuge, concealment, in a very masquerading, roundabout way. And the Mitziv said, and it sounds like a matter of psychology, but the Mitziv actually writes that this is because Rivka was in awe of Yitzchak. But the very fact that Yitzchak was otherworldly, the very fact that Yitzchak was an Akeda, Yitzchak was a Korban, made him very removed from earthly experience. And of course, we asked about the Rivka was a child throughout, according to Chazal, 3 years old. Although obviously very mature 3 year olds, or 10 years old is the other opinion, Chazal, but still, Yitzchak was 30 when he got married, and as a result, there was always a sense of aura between Rivka and Yitzchak. Although it's interesting that we do find that Rivka, even as a young child, was able to bring back all of the nisim that existed in the tent of Sarah Imenu, or at least through their completion. She was able to do that. But still the Mitziv says she was unable to communicate directly, and the Mitziv actually suggests that although there are infinite levels of meaning here, but one of the problems in the story as it unfolded was Rivka's inability to directly talk to Yitzchak about this situation. The second modern psychology insight that we get is an insight from Shimshon Yisrael Hirsch. And again, it wouldn't be the fact that great Gedolim say it, who would sometimes, I think, be criticized by kind of reading in modernistic notions into the Chumash, which everyone outside of the Chumash world does that anyway, but you know, we often don't do that. But nevertheless, the Rebbe Mefarshim make these observations. And they point out that the pasuk for Yitgulu Hana'arim, right? Yitzchak and Esav, a lack of an Esav were twins. They obviously look differently. Esav came out hairy and with a ruddy complexion. By the way, according to the Midrashim, Esav never had a gris. Interesting. Why didn't Esav have a gris at 8 days old? Because since there was so much blood there, it was feared that he would bleed. He'd be like a hemophiliac that would bleed to death. And therefore they decided to defer the gris till he was bar mitzvah, and upon bar mitzvah he won't be pierced. So Esav was actually never even circumcised, unlike Ishmael. But be it as it may, obviously Yaakov and Esav were born very differently. They physically looked differently. Spiritually, they were different. According to Chazal, the fight that was within Rivka's body was that when she would walk by a holy place, one twin would tunnel to get out, and another place, another twin would tunnel to get out, etc. But her first points out that they nevertheless were twins. They were the same age. Esav came out a little bit first. And by equal on her own means, they were given the same type of education, the same type of chinuch. Just as it's the tendency, even today, when you have twins, to dress them the same and do everything the same. And the first says that perhaps the destruction of Esav came because there was the attempt to make him the studious masmu, the diligent student, the righteous person that a Yaakov was growing up in the home of Yitzchak and Rivka. And the first suggests that Esav himself had many, many kofos. Esav himself had many positive attributes. As we'll see, this is why Yitzchak is something we prefer to, we'll talk about that. Esav had enthusiasm, he had energy, he had physical prowess, he could have been a great organizer. There are many different things that Esav could have done, but the one thing Esav could not be is Esav could not be a Yaakov. And when you try to take that personality and make him a Yoshev Oha, somebody who sits in the tent of Torah all day, that's going to break the person and destroy the person. And he'll just reject, because that's an area in which he doesn't have the capacity it is a one-size-fits-all. And there are many people who would be very, very fine Balabhasins who have been cast, contributed to Kaliswara, whose spirits have been crushed, and as a result, that the potential in which they do have is never realized, because there's only one model that is held up as the appropriate model. And what Burke suggests, that to some degree this could have been the tragedy, or at least one dimension of the tragedy of the Yaakov and Esav, that the cultos that existed within Esav, even for good, could have been realized. Now, one can posit even a third thing. You know, Chazal teaches us, Rashi quotes it, that when Yaakov was cooking the lentils, the Nazir Abrashim, so Rashi cooked the lentils, so Rashi says, because he was cooking a mourner's food to give to his father Yitzchak, because this was the day that Avraham Avinu died. And of course, we know the halakha is, this very day, that the first meal that a person eats after Levaya, after he's going to Shiva, should be food that is prepared by somebody else. It's called a Seudas Havra, like you feed the other. So it's interesting that Rashi said that, but Esav did not become a public Russia. Esav did not openly rebel against Judaism and belief in Hashem. I think the Jews know the belief in Hashem and mitzvahs until the day that Avraham died. And this was a fulfillment of Hashem's promise to Avraham that Ata Tavo Elav Osecha B'Shalom, you will go to your forefathers in peace. He compared to say that Tavo, you will be buried in a good old age. That Avraham Avinu was given a bracha that he would never experience firsthand any of his descendants who became the Shoyim. But no, even Yishmael, who was expelled, we know that after Shmuel vowed, Yishmael did Shiva, and Avraham vowed that Yishmael was a righteous person. And Esav too did not become a Russia, openly at least, until Avraham Avinu died. But once again, if you apply kind of a psychological dynamic to it, could you perhaps raise the notion that his grandfather was the one person in the world? Which, in other words, it's not merely that Esav didn't become a Russia as long as Avraham was alive, because Bob's promise to Avraham. But maybe the relationship between Avraham and Esav was such that Esav felt there was somebody in the world that was makshir the qualities that he had. Very often it is the grandparents that can see certain things in the grandchild that the parents don't. And we have many, many cases, both in the Jewish world and in the outside Jewish world, where after the loss of that one grandparent, the person falls apart because one does not get that emotion as opposed to the parents. Well, the Torah doesn't elaborate on these things, but one could indeed be very intrigued by what was the relationship between Esav and Avraham, and with Avraham the person in Esav's life that kept Esav in check, and when that influence was removed, Esav was Yotzei the Talbis Rav. Now, and yet we do see, the Torah says the following. The Torah says that Yitzchak loved Esav. Yitzchak loved Esav. He tzayed the pig. So literally the translation is, because the prey, the hunt, that Esav brought, he would give to his father Yitzchak. Very difficult topic. So Yitzchak loves Esav because Esav brought him good food. So we'll talk about it. And Yitzchak was a Hebrew, Yaakov. Yitzchak loved Yaakov. Now remember, no, it doesn't say the opposite. It doesn't say Yitzchak didn't like Yaakov. I think it was obvious. And it does not say Yitzchak didn't like Esav. In other words, it emphasizes simply the primary idea that Yitzchak had a great love for Esav over Yaakov on one level, and Yitzchak had a great love for Yaakov over Esav on the other level, but it doesn't mean that there was not love on both sides. Even with Rachel and Leah, it's very interesting, get ahead a little bit in this week's parsha. You know, it's an interesting thing. On one level it says Yaakov loved Rachel more than Leah. Now that itself does not imply any hate or dislike for Leah. To the contrary, the implication is he loved Leah as well, and yet we find that Leah's own perception was that she was hated. And there's all of the children she named because she thought, now that I have Reuben, God has seen my affliction, and now that I have a Shimon, God has heard that I was hated, now that I have a lady, now my husband will want to be with me, right? Over and over and over again. But, you know, the concept is very, very logical. But Chas v'Shalom, Yaakov Avinu, according to most impressions, there are some impressions to the contrary, but most impressions say, certainly Yaakov Avinu had a great love for Leah.
but it was the perception of a human being that if there's 50 husband and wife, and if there's somebody else that is more, then the person feels totally rejected and despised. And it was her feeling coming from the love that Yaakov had for Rachel, which was above that. But certainly, most of us would say we would never assume that Yaakov of Avinu had hatred, if for no other reason. We have a technical halakhic reason. The halakhic reason is one is not allowed to have intimacy with a spouse if one hates them or one wants to divorce them or whatever it is. And the children that are born from such a union generally do not have a sinning bracha. You could hope the male is smaller. Children of a hated wife. And yet we find that Lois' children are the bulk of Klal Yisrael. Like Yehuda is the fourth child, Malchus comes from Yehuda. In fact, if anything, the contribution of B'nai Lois to the foundation of Klal Yisrael is even greater than the contribution of B'nai Lois. So it would be impossible of Pibah Halacha to even posit that Yaakov was with somebody of which he hated. But anyway, going back to this, the question becomes, everyone asks the question, what is it about Esav that Yitzchak likes in particular? Yitzchak loved Esav. Does he think Esav is more righteous than Yaakov? Well, after all, even if we saw like Rashi, that Esav managed to fool his father, as he never know, makes the point that essentially Yitzchak was fooled, Rashi brings it as well, because Esav used to ask very pious questions. Esav would ask, right, as we know, how do you take the truma and the maser, the tithing, off salts and off straw and off water, which you're not obligated to do? So Yitzchak figures, gee, I have such a son that's not only, you know, keeping kosher, but he wants to laugh kosher and mahadrin and all sorts of chumras. Must be a very, very firm person. But even if you're going to say that Yitzchak was poor, but certainly he also saw lack of his father too. Now, the way the Hasidic scholars say it, they say the following. Rashi quotes the Medrash that says, why was Yitzchak blind? Because he was blinded from the tears that the Malachi HaShoreis shed upon the Akedah Yitzchak. The tears blinded him as they fell into his eyes. So in the Hasidic Sforim, they explain this in an allegorical way. And that is, the pivotal level of holiness that he achieved at the moment of the Akedah, like in a fifth set in the marriage relationship, made him otherworldly. He was no longer a person who lived in Olam Haba. Olam Haba is a world of total emes. In Olam Haba there is no sheker, there are no lies, there's no deceit. And therefore Yitzchak was a person who in his own life could not understand anymore the notion of hypocrisy. And therefore, as it's for himself, Yitzchak can be fooled. Not chas v'shalom because he was naive or not intelligent, but because it was a function of the holiness that he achieved, that he could not understand externals not corresponding to an inner reality. And Sonius and Tunius were all the same with him. And therefore, the Rashi and the Abarbanel, based on this thought, so that Yitzchak was deceived.
Rashi
interprets, Rashi interprets the flower of the pit. Rashi is a different
type. Well, how could he eat that if they say the
Gemara says was extremely skillful. Esav could shoot an arrow.
Yes.
And the arrow would check. He could check the animal.
With
an
arrow?
Yes, he could check with an arrow. Yes. Aim the arrow exactly right. Cuts the throat. He could check. Yeah, Esav had that check. So Rashi interprets he fired the pill doesn't mean he fell Yitzchak 100-fold, but it means he fired, he trapped Yitzchak to a pill with the mouth of Esav. That's what Rashi said. In other words, he was Yitzchak was fooled. But the question is this, one has a very simple question. Yes. Well, but they said the other way. In other words, he did not perceive it. In a way, he didn't see Yemen. He did, because the Yemen of this world is by the Sheker. In other words, he did not perceive and understand the capacity of human beings to be false. And therefore, whatever was represented to him, he took as true. Because from his mentality, speech is always a reflection of truth. Behavior is a reflection of internal amigas. And therefore, in that sense, Yitzchak did not understand duplicity and hypocrisy and faking. Now you're correct.
Therefore, he saw Sheker, because in this world, if you only see MS, you will be misled. You will not see the truth. Because the truth of this world is that it's false. And you can't look at this world as if it's true.
An extension of that question, because I have the same question, is, are we perhaps talking about two different qualities? Because it would seem, as I've understood it, the God of the Torah, the one who's really learned more Torah, has greater access to MS in human nature, etc. But we're talking about Yitzchak, and obviously Yaakov was learning Dylan Delilah, and he understood where Israel was coming from. Are we talking about something different than that with Yitzchak, the spiritual level, something different than the kind of MS? We talk about his spirituality as Ben Olam Haba.
Right.
That's a different place than the deep access to truth that Torah learning seems to go to.
Well, in that sense, that the Torah learning is designed to bring Ruchnius down into the world. Yitzchak's way of serving Hashem was to raise himself out of this world, as opposed to bringing Torah down into. When you bring Torah down into this world, the Torah illuminates the world that you are occupying. And therefore you see the corners, and you see the resources, and you see the hiddenness. But when your avoda is to lift yourself up, you yourself become very close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but you can't shine your light in the corners here, because you're not here anymore.
So to our way of thinking, that doesn't seem like it's serving him very well. To the Zonishan's way of thinking?
Well, I was just that shortly. In other words, why was it the lesson Hashem that Yitzchak should be deceived? Why is it the fellow of Hashem or
I mean, even not in this particular instance,
yeah.
But the concept of someone being so high and not dying and being here.
Well, again, it was needed to some degree to create the tension and synthesis between Yitzchak and Avram. Avram is being exemplified the one that if we find similar course of the world, if we need a chesed, Yitzchak was in that same consolidation, and we need that balance to produce the truth of Yaakov.
So that was beyond him, but in terms of himself,
it didn't help.
He was a vehicle for doing this.
He was a vehicle to create the integration that produces a Yaakov that can be cut the show. What if, and in fact, he's only going to himself, he uses the phrase, Ula Yibushemi Abi.
maybe my father was feeling. Remember we mentioned 10 is the negative, and the wow is negative. He actually hopes to get caught. He really doesn't want to do this. And Yaakov, of course, is Yish Emes, who's identified with not. And yet he answers ahead, this is very, very painful, but we'll discuss that. But if you remember, Yaakov said the famous, Yitzchak said the famous words, Hakol Ko Yaakov. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. I was dying with Esau, at the hands of the hands of Esau. Now, Koko Yaakov does not mean, as you might think, that Yaakov had a different voice than Esau, because apparently the assumption of Rashi is Yaakov and Esau have the same voice. Koko Yaakov is manner of speaking, but Yaakov uses the name of Hashem. Hashem has gotten me this fool, and Esau doesn't use the name of Hashem. So what's that? So Yitzchak knows Esau doesn't talk about Hashem, doesn't use the name of Hashem. Yaakov does. So how can we tell what Yitzchak thinks? Esau is the righteous person. Yitzchak was aware even beforehand that Esau didn't talk that way, didn't behave that way, etc. So, that's what we're going to say. That's what we're going to some other explanations. What I'm saying is that this is a difficulty to assume that Yitzchak was simply taken in, or Yitzchak was deceived. Now the other says, someone in this way, someone learned that Yitzchak knew that Esau was not the more righteous one. Yitzchak always knew that Yaakov is the greater one, Yaakov is the father, Yaakov is the child. But according to some, Yitzchak saw Esau as more suited for the mission of Avraham. Effectively, we're going to divide Avraham Avinu's mission into two components. Because Avraham Avinu was a great person, the person who outreach worker, so to speak, the person who spread the name of Hashem throughout the world, and Yitzchak saw that perhaps Yaakov is not suitable for that particular mission. He saw Yaakov as a Yoshev Ohel, studious, quiet, reticent, withdrawn, preoccupied with his own spiritual development. He saw Esau as a go-getter, an outgoing person, so he thought perhaps we'll divvy it up, and Esau will be the more suitable replacement. In a way, when the question says, Yitzchak saw Yaakov as too much like Yitzchak. And he saw Esau as more like Avraham on some level. And therefore he thought that Esau could be the outreach worker. Esau could be, the bracha that we're talking about according to this interpretation, is the bracha to be the successor to Avraham. And he thought that Yaakov might be the spiritual battery. We have this, right? For example, the West Indian, not a Yaakov and Esau situation. But if you look at many schools or organizations, you'll often see community co-ops. You'll often find that the bigger Talmud Chacham, let's say, perhaps might be, not always, but might be the person that's less involved in the public lecturing and less involved in making the kind of parties and things. This is where the shallows for consultation, for guidance, etc. Then you have the person who's the organizing co-op, who's not necessarily the master. And the way it's very interesting that this may have been the keeper, Yitzchak's attempt to be the sacking, that was the first point of the but if the problem was that as children, Esau needed more time to play baseball, and Esau needed to run around, and that wasn't the plan, now there's a recognition that perhaps we'll try to work with Esau's unique co-op. And let him be the one that is Mikalei, the thousands of people, Tachas Kansi Hashem. The problem was it was too late. The problem was it was too late at that time. Had that strategy been employed initially, perhaps it would have been successful. It means the Hashbaka, that it would not be implemented. But that I think Rabbi Kamenetsky mentioned, that Yitzchak actually viewed Esau as closer on some level to Avraham Avinu than Yaakov himself, who Yitzchak viewed as somewhat similar to. Well, that's right. Well, of course, you know that Chabal identified, although it's not clear genealogically where you get it from, Chabal would formally identify the Roman Empire with Esau coming from Esau, and the Bavos that were in, right? The four Bavos, the first of the Bavos is Baba. Baba was conquered by Persia. Persia was conquered by Wabam, which was going to the great little Macedonia, that's probably there, and by Greek culture. And then eventually, Eretz Yisrael was conquered by the Romans, which is called the Baros of Abam, or the Baros of Esau. And you are in Baros of Abam, Adawam Hazar. The people sometimes left the Pasha, well, gee, why are we in blah, 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 blah? We don't have Julius Augustus Caesar ruling over us. So it is said, because Roman Empire eventually converted to Christianity, and Constantine, and Western civilization is largely the product of Christian culture, and therefore all of us are still in the state of Gwelos Ebba. But the big exception, actually, this is the Ebn Ezra. The Ebn Ezra writes that he considers the fourth Gwelos to be the Gwelos of Yishmael, which is Arabic culture. The truth is, the fourth Gwelos has split into two branches. West Jews in Western civilization are in the Gwelos of Asa. And the Jews in Arabic culture, but there are much fewer of them out in Israel, but in the Middle Ages, the Islamic empires of the Glass Territory were the Gwelos of Yishmael. So it's interesting that the two powers of Gwelos are Asa and Yishmael, even today. We have the Christian countries, and we have the Islamic countries. And this power of Yishmael is resurging very greatly in this day and age. And, yeah.
Going back to Utah, what could have been the Utah plan, had that, other possible benefits that have been given, given with the children driving and running, giving everything to one, providing the government. And also his own feeling, which you alluded to, that he had a certain meaning, a certain
faith. Yeah, and this is really, again, that, I'm a little rough. So, you know, psychologists with this, but again, psychologically, it is a very interesting idea that often we love in our children the qualities that we don't have. That Yitzchak was attractive. And again, this is in a spiritual sense. We're not thinking that Yitzchak was attracted to a football player. I mean, we're not making it about growth. But Yitzchak was attractive to that person who's able to kind of go out and influence people. And he thought that Yaakov was kind of rough himself and not suitable to that person. This is a question of what to us was. Now, the Malbim, which you may have heard of, does a slightly different division of labor, which actually explains the topic this way. The Malbim points out, and the first of the subject, the Malbim points out that if you look at the blessing that Yitzchak gave Yaakov when he thought he would raise it, look at what the blessing says, and you look at the blessing that Yitzchak gave Yaakov when he knew he was Yaakov, we see that they're not the same. The blessing that Yitzchak gave Yaakov when he thought he was Esav, or at least suspected, was a blessing involving Olam Hazeh, prosperity in this world. The Yitzchak of our kid might have come to give you the Tal of Shemayim, the dew and the rain. You should have mastery, you should have control. People should serve you. That was the Olam Hazeh blessing. But there was no mention that you should have the heritage of Avraham Avinu. The first reference to someone having the spiritual heritage of Avraham Avinu was only when later Yitzchak knows that he's got his weapon. So the Malbim explains following. The Malbim explains it was never Yitzchak's intention to give Asa the blessing of spiritual greatness. The concept is this. The Malbim posits a division of labor, but a little bit different than with Yaakov's story. Yaakov was his thought was that Esau would be the coward people. He says, no. He says, the model here is the Sukkah and the Bullen partnership. Where we know, like later on, the Sukkah was the Sheva that was devoted to Lumen HaTorah. And the Bullen was involved in commerce and business. But they went, well, we have to not forget it. The Bullen was the Kaya and found the Torah. But be it as it may, we are told that Smach, that Moshe Rabbeinu brought a smach, the woman, smach the sapa who are alacha. Smach the woman with the sapa, the sapa who are alacha. Rejoice the woman when you go out, and the sapa when you're in the tent of Torah. So Chazal says that the fact that the woman gave its resources to benefit the sapa gives the woman a schar with the sapa in Talmud Torah. Very important idea that supporting Torah gives us the schar of the learning that is done. It's like the Rabbat in Eretz Yisrael. Including, if you really want to have any suffer from a partnership, though, you are actually from a partnership agreement you draw up, and you actually supply a person's living, and we'll get half the reward. If somebody asked the shock or the stifler, should have been told to do this. Should have been told to agree to give up half of their reward in Olam Haba in order to be supported. I mean, wouldn't he be a good deal? Because whatever you get in Olam Haba is not splitting of it does not really diminish. It's not that, you know, you get 100, and as a result of these buckets of gold, you only get 50. It's rather a sense that you just create more and get to that person. So a person does not lose fish.
Some way of redemption. Some way of connecting.
We didn't have to see very clearly. This is actually a very poignant idea, because in effect, according to the Maharal, Yitzchak knows that Esav is a spiritual failure. Yitzchak knows that Esav is never going to be this son, but he still cares about it. He still loves him. He wants to give him something. He wants to give him some way in which he can reconstruct his life. I think sometimes we ignore the fact that, you know, and the finish too, parents love their children. You know, it's not just everything is a matter of an abstract love. The Torah says Yitzchak loved Esav even more than he was a Russian. Yitzchak loved Esav just as Rabban and Malach loved Rakshalach. And Yitzchak wants to give Esav something that will enable Esav to do something which gives him a connection to our Kodesh Baruch Hu.
I'm a little confused. There are a lot of different buckets and important things going on around here.
Yeah.
According to this idea that it's not that Yitzchak wanted to give Esav his work as a son, but that Yitzchak wanted to give Esav his job, that's different than this.
The question is this. He wanted to give Esav Rachel's pertaining to Olam Hazeh.
Right.
And he didn't want to give Rachel's pertaining. And when he said that, we're going to try to do that. And his, on an abstract level, he thought, number one, Olam Hazeh will be the vehicle by which Esav achieves some redemption. Number two, he thinks it will free Rachel of the distractions of dealing with Olam Hazeh. And number three, and he feels that Yaakov will be destroyed by Olam Hazeh. That Olam Hazeh, a world of sheker, a world of confrontation, a world of war, a world of struggle. He wants Yaakov, as it were, to be the Yoshev Ono that is not involved in this world. Now, the question then becomes one of definition. And we're going to make it as a side point. That is, what exactly does this Racha of Olam Hazeh mean? In other words, if Yitzchak would have had his way, what exactly would Esav have had some say that this would have meant that the government of Eretz Yisrael would in fact have been the Yad Esav. What Yaakov would have lived, Esav would live there, but essentially they would be like the Levine. In other words, all of Yaakov Avinu's children would be the Bechina of Kohanim and Levine that don't own the land and not involved in politics. And the politics would be in the hands of the Esavs of the world. That's what I mean by the Eretz Yisrael. Not the living, but the Malchus of Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, now let me just get one other thing clear. What was the concept of the Chorah about?
Yeah, I'll get to that. What's the word? Another problem. How do you connect the first? Yeah, well, I was going to go through the incident. Now, in this sense, apparently, Yitzchak was opposed as well, because the mistake is a much more subtle mistake, and that is Yitzchak coming from rubber class, coming from a home of destruction, Yitzchak perhaps knowing his son on a day-to-day basis, saw that number one, Esav would not use his resources in this manner. Yitzchak would be too optimistic. And number two, Olam Hazeh will not destroy Yaakov, but to the contrary, the purpose of Torah is not to escape from this world, but the purpose of Torah is to elevate the material world that we live in. But again, the purpose of Torah is to build a society, to be involved in even governing a country, and to show that this can be done in a moral way. And it's very interesting. Digress for a second. The Shem Mishmur says an interesting shot. If you remember by when Balak, the king of Moab, hires Balaam to curse the Jewish people before they enter the land of Israel. So the pasuk says Balak was very afraid of the Jews. So the Mefarshim asked the Kasha, how is Balak afraid of the Jews? Hashem commanded Moshe not to wage war against Moab, because Moab was the land that was given to Lot. They couldn't attack Moab. So what is he afraid of? So the Shem Mishmur says, Moab is not afraid that he'll be attacked. Moab is afraid of having the Jews come to Eretz Yisrael. Why is this? Because in the Midbar, their spiritual existence is totally removed from day-to-day life. They're surrounded by clouds of glory, and they have the moon, and they have the world. Religion, in other words, is irrelevant to real life. A corrupt society like Moab can look at the Jews in the desert and say, well, that's fine. They have their mitzvahs, but that's because they don't have all the problems that we have. And therefore, he was perfectly happy to have religion be an irrelevancy to day-to-day life. But once they enter Eretz Yisrael, however, God's intervention in the land of Israel is not to welcome miracles anymore, right? There's no man, there's no Anoni HaKavod, there's no Be'er. Life becomes well, at 7, of course, our life in Israel is miraculous, as it is very big, but it's in the nature of a more hidden miracle. And that's why you don't look at your checking account balance, right? Because when I said, it's more sense but unless you have an open miracle, Hashem only brings miracles on things that are not counted, meaning to say, if I don't know how much is in my bank account, maybe Hashem will put a few more dollars in. But if I know there's only $10, then I'm not going to get 11. Right? So that's why checks don't bounce until you balance your checking account. Then they will bounce. You're out of sync. I can't promise you this, but we can act as well. This often works. But the pshat is, certainly, the way God relates to us once we come to Eretz Yisrael is very different than the way it was in the Midrash. And at that point, you have to dig ditches and plant fields and build buildings and fight wars and create the tax structures and politics. At that point, Balak is afraid. If they can establish a society that exists in the world that's based on Kedusha, that's a reproach to everything that we spoke there. So the Shem Mishnah ourselves, Balak Kalelas, was to prevent the Jewish people from entering the land of Israel. Which explains why he didn't ask Bilam for a blessing to protect us from invasion, which one would have expected. He asked Bilam, first thing, we'll never be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. And indeed, Theodore Herzl once remarked, when people brought up the issue of the other Zionist state, etc., what did they do with the religious people? So he said, we shall confine the clergy to their synagogues, just as the army will be confined to its barracks. Unfortunately, neither part of the statement has turned out to be true. Unfortunately, the army has not been confined to its barracks. It's had to fight, and fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your point of view, neither have abundantly been confined to their synagogue. But okay, so in this sense, this was the toast to have the Yisachar and Zebulun partnership. But then, let me go back to Dina's point, and that is, in effect, therefore, it was the Ratzon of Yitzchak Avinu that the brachos of Olam Hazeh should be given to Esav. Rivka, on the other hand, saw that Esav would not use those brachos properly, and she wanted Yaakov to get them by manipulating the reality. In fact, the first, even from this point, the first says, this is why Yaakov disguises himself. And because Yaakov, in effect, wants to communicate to Yitzchak, you know, I am capable of doing the type of stuff that is a very paradoxical thing. I can behave like an angel. I can behave like a lion. Now, what's the point of doing that? By telling Yitzchak, I will not be destroyed by what they do to me. Because I know what it's like. I understand it. Meaning, I'm not going to be eaten up by this world. Because if I know what it's like, I can protect myself from it. Oh, my God, will not destroy me. Because I am aware of the duplicity of the world. In other words, the concept was to show Yitzchak, I too understand the duplicity, sheker, misrepresentation, hypocrisy. Not that I should live by one Chas V'Shalom, but if I understand it, then when it's done to me, I will be protected, and I will be able to see for it. That's the Bab Baruch here. This is why Yitzchak, after the Mitzvah, says, you know, if that's what, that otherwise it's very difficult, because Yitzchak says, the hands are the hands of Esav, and the voice is the voice of Yaakov. So, if Yitzchak doesn't know, then why does he go ahead? How does he know to resolve it in favor of the Esav, what he thinks is there, instead of the Yaakov? The answer is, at that point, it became irrelevant. Look, the hands, if the action this person in front of him, he's either Esav, or he's a Yaakov who has demonstrated the Korach of an Esav in a positive sense. So, whoever it is, at that point, the first in the mouth of the Yitzchak didn't even think it was necessarily Esav at that point, but it didn't make a difference. But the question still is, Dina raised it. And the one is the moral question of the ends justifying the means. I mean, the Malbim makes it a lot better because the Malbim says that at the time Yitzchak blessed the man in front of him, he already thought it may have been Yaakov. Right? The blessing was not a deceptive blessing. But the question he raises is this. Did in fact Yaakov get anything out of this whole exercise? Because remember, the Berachas Avraham, Yaakov would have gotten anyway. So the ruse wasn't necessary for that one. That he would have gotten, and that he did get. But this additional dimension of Berachas Olam Hazeh, you will be dominant over your brother, etc. Did in fact a lack of justice. And if you look at the cross, look at the cross of Yaakov Avinu's life because of this. Yaakov runs away, and Chazal says, because of the deception that he practiced on Esav, so the Pesach says Esav cried, or the Medrash says Esav shed two tears. Because of those two tears, the two Batei Mikdash were destroyed. When Esav cried, and again, I guess from a human standpoint, I just see how much Esav is yearning for his father's blood. I don't think he does that to say it was hypocrisy or selfishness. He cried to his father. He said, is there only one blessing? Can't you give me something? And the Pesach says, Vayitzak, Zaakav, Vibola, Imola, a loud and bitter wailing. And that expression appeared only one other place in Tanakh, and the Gilas Esther, that when Mordechai hears about Haman's decree, Vayitzak, Zaakav, Vibola, Imola, Haman, who is the descendant of Amalek, who is the grandson of Esau, because Yaakov made Esau have that cry, Haman makes Mordechai and the Jewish people suffer that pain. And what happens to Yaakov? Yaakov is deceived in Laban's house. He wants to marry Rachel. He works 7 years. He gets lower. He is deceived in various cheating that Laban does to him over time. And ultimately, he is deceived by the loss of his son Yosef for 22 years because Yosef's brothers tell him that your son has been whipped up by a wild animal. And this is the Casaldus. This is his garments. So in effect, Yaakov would be there suffered tremendously. Even if we say that the ends justify the means here, for whatever reason. The ends, as we see, Tom Shalevich used to say, that when you bring... a law of the divine nature of the world that when you bring pain to another human being, you suffer consequences, even if it's justifiable, as it is that when you stick your hands in fire, it's going to be burnt. And therefore, yes, Yaakov may have been justified, Rivka may have been justified, there was a cheshbon that ought to be his particular right. But if Esav is giving sorrow, then indeed we suffer for it. And in fact, one could even say that to a certain degree, depending on how you understand it, the brachos that Yitzchak tried to get for Yaakov have in fact never been realized. If we say that the bracha that Yitzchak wants to get for Yaakov is the bracha of Olam Hazah and rulership in the world, having to deal with Yaakov, you will be the master over your brother, that is a bracha that to this day has never been fulfilled. In the Russian site, in Moshe Mashiach, etc. But one should raise the question, what's the message of the Torah here? In other words, it's very ambiguous. Is the message of the Torah that sometimes the ends justify the means? Sometimes the end is so important that it justifies the means? Or is there a message of the Torah that forgets? Maybe no matter how moral is the end, you cannot obtain it properly by immoral means. And therefore the Torah clearly relates both the suffering of Yaakov Avinu, his victimization through deception, and ultimately the fact that the brachos were never even realized in any meaningful sense in this world, that perhaps the concept was that it was wrong to take those brachos in mind. So the only bracha we have in terms of mastery is that people will accuse us of having it. But never really having it. It's like the shadow of the bracha, like the certain shadowy aspect of that bracha we got here.
You know, like even like in Europe, you know, like as bad as it was, after the Jews got rid of the shoes, the diamonds, and everything. So even here, you can not say decentralized or property, education.
You're suggesting perhaps the Brech of Olam Hazzah was received by Jews to some extent.
It's just that he got more.
Okay, that's an interesting point.
But also, it ain't over till it's over. I mean, so just to say that the bracha doesn't come to Olam Haba and therefore it's an irrelevancy, I don't think it's a correct assumption. Because truly, that is an integral part of the ultimate picture. It's not just, well, okay,
right,
and next year, you know, we get it going on.
But the point is that there'll be a tremendous amount of struggle, and it's hard to know that if the brachas wouldn't have been obtained that way, would the process have
been. Right, and I have another question. Was this something that Yaakov had no control of, the fact that he was not obviously rewarded for the brachas in this world, or was there any kind of choice factor here?
Yes, there is a medrash. There is a medrash that says that Yaakov Avinu, it was in different ways, but Yaakov Avinu actually asked Hashem to defer the fulfillment of the bracha of mastery until a later time. He felt he could live without it at this point. And he said his children will need it at some point in the future. Well, according to one brother, she likes to defer it. But also, now, keep in mind, too, with respect to Asa, when he found out that Asa was Asa, it's also very relevant. He said the following. He gave Asa a blessing of peculiar prosperity, and he said, Barak Hashir Tawid, is Barak Bar Ulo Me'al Savarecha. Now, this is actually a difficult word to translate. The Rashi says, Kashir Tawid means, when you rightfully bemoan your servitude, meaning when you cry out to Hashem that the Jews are not deserving of being rulers because they're sinful, like Kashir Tawid, Ufarasko, you flow up the wealth of the Yaakov. So the truth of the matter is, although the way the Torah describes it, Yaakov should always have dominance over Esau, but when we're not deserving, Esau will throw us off temporarily. Basically, the concept is we are in that permanent, almost permanent state of temporary dislocation. Meaning to say, we are not in the ascendancy because this is Kashyar Tavur, the Rapture Ruba, the Alts of Eleven. In other words, it's a disequilibrium. In other words, yes, it lasted for more of our history than the other. But it is the temporary dislocation, meaning as the Maral was, as the Maral says, the whole phenomenon of Golus is temporary dislocation. It's called, in philosophical terms, it's called Mikra. It's something that happens, but it's not the essence. Things are not right. In other words, things are off kilter, and the fact that they're off kilter for thousands of years does not change the fact. So in effect, there is this permanent bracha, but the bracha gets deferred or pushed off because of Kashir Tawid Ufarakta Ula, and the rest of Lava, whatever result of the Ula, things get reinstated. Reinstated again. But again, it's an interesting idea. Tawid is when you moon. It's interesting. It seems to be connected to that, but Rashi translates it as when you feel low, when you complain. Like, and it says in Tehillim, Tawid b'sichi. Tawid b'sichi means when I moan and I cry to God. It comes from one Bible, but it's referring to when you moan, when you complain. So God will listen to your complaint. But the notion of pain, causing pain to another, having the cross to come back here, is a very, very important idea, because it makes us be very cautious in being self-righteous. Sometimes, you know, we're critical of people, and we justify it as being a shame shamayim, and doing it for the sake of others. I'm doing it for a mitzvah. But the Kashrut Rebbe is reminding us that that's not enough of a teretz. And as a result, you do what you have to do sometimes, and of course you have to do it, but be very, very delicate and careful not to do more than you have to do, because there's going to be a cost one way or the other, even on the part that you have to do. So Kal Vachomer, don't go beyond that particular point. Therefore, the concept of Lashem Shemayim justify what a person does has to be taken very, very cautiously. But they say it's kind of a joke, but they say it's interesting fact. Every machlokes has Lashem Shemayim. Every argument that is for the sake of heaven will endure. So it's a positive, and we'll learn about it, Kolo and Shammai. But the Sikhe Hasidus says, when people are fighting and each one thinks they're acting for the sake of heaven, it'll always exist. That machlokes will never end, because they'll always think they're doing the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have to assume that that's so. Certainly, if you're going around murdering people, certainly a Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to give a din b'cheshbon on that. Every Shabbos, we say Aparachamim, Musaf, which is a prayer for people who bow about Kiddush Hashem. Do you know about the historical origin of Aparachamim was after the First Crusade? In 1096, the Eastern European Kehillot, Western Azic congregations, enacted a special prayer about Musaf in memory of the martyrs who died on Kiddush Hashem. So we were out with Baruch Hashem to avenge their blood. Now, if somebody dies on Kiddush Hashem with some kind of a terrorist attack, you don't. If people are killed or they're wearing clothes that are bloodstained, you don't remove the clothes and do a tahara. You bury them in the clothes that have the blood, as if to call out to Hashem to see this blood and to avenge. So you don't even do a tahara. So certainly that's going to be the case. Let me just end with one thought. It's interesting that the Gemara in Shabbos says, it's a difficult Gemara, but Lassid Lava, and we never know what Lassid Lava means, some point in the future, Hashem will go to Avraham Avinu and say, your children have sinned, what do you want to do about it? And Avraham Avinu will say at that point, if they sin, destroy them, they're not worth saving anymore. And Hashem didn't want to hear that answer. So he goes to Avraham Avinu and he says, Avraham, your children have sinned. And Yaakov says the same thing. Yaakov says, destroy them. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is a little upset. He says, the grandfather doesn't help me, and the grandson doesn't help me. I'm going to have to go to the son. So he goes to Yitzchak and says, your children have sinned. So Yitzchak says, my children? They're not your children? husband comes home after and says, take care of your son. Or whatever, vice versa. He says, they're my children, not your children? And how come with Matan Torah, when they're so good, you call them your children are sons. Now they're my children. And then he tells the Kaddish Baruch Hu, listen, let's make a deal. This is the Gemara Shabbos. Let's make a deal. So, but how much does a person live? An average of 70 years. Until the age of 20, Hashem does not punish people for our bolos. I mean, bar mitzvah, you're chayav for the mitzvah, but the punishment is from heaven come at the age of 20. So, only have 50 years left. First 20 are excluded. And the 50 years, 25 years you spent sleeping, assuming the right to sleep. So I will have 25 years. Of the 25 years, half of the time you're eating, davening, taking care of physical needs, so they don't count. So I will have, Yitzchak Avinu says, in a life of 70 years, is only 12 and a half years of Avinu. He says. So listen, Hashem, why don't you take half and I'll take half? And if you don't want to take half, I'll take all of it because I was an Akedah. I was willing to give my life. And at that point, the Jewish people will call Yitzchak, you are our only true father. And Yitzchak will say, no, praise the Kaddish Baruch Hu, your father. Now, the notion of splitting half and half, that's the Maral explained. Maral says, what notion of half and half? And Maral says, because in effect, in every Aveira, Hashem has a shiftus, Hashem has a partnership, right? Because Hashem gave us the inclination, Hashem gave us the Yitzchak, Hashem gave us the passions. So in effect, on some level, we say to Hashem, listen, I made the wrong choice, but you gave me that Torah to do evil. So there's a split. But why is it Yitzchak? Why not Avraham and why not Yaakov? It's interesting. I saw two explanations of this Gemara, which are totally opposite from each other. But one perspective is that it's only Yitzchak that can truly be the Lamed Zechus, finds goodness for the Jewish people, because it was Yitzchak who loved Esav until the very end. Even Avraham Avinu, although he didn't want to do it, Avraham eventually did expel Yishmael. But Yitzchak, at the very end, wanted to give Esav a bracha. Even before Esav did Shiva. See, Avraham was Yishmael, then Yishmael did Shiva. Therefore, it's Yitzchak that ultimately was able to bless the irredeemable. And therefore, even when we're not deserving, Yitzchak can stand up for us. And therefore, that's worth one explanation. But I saw an explanation that works exactly the opposite direction. And that is the following. Each of the Avos has a different personality, right? And each of the Avos are given misnomers, are given trials, which force them to go the opposite of their propensity. Right? Avraham's personality is the loving chesed, and Avraham's nisayon is one of apparent cruelty. Yakeda, somebody like Yishmael. Yaakov's attribute is identified as truth,
And he is given the divine mission to engage in deception, or so he understands what says, given him a divinely ordained mission. So the question is, what's Yitzchak's Nisayim? Where do you find the trial of Yitzchak, so to speak? So some might say that the trial of Yitzchak is that although Yitzchak's attribute is one of inner strength and discipline and commitment, and as a result, Yitzchak is likely to be the least tolerant of deviation and undeserving, it is Yitzchak that is given the mission to rise above his nature and plead for the undeserving. Now, it's a little difficult, but you normally don't perceive of a Nisayon after death. I mean, you put someone in blood, the Neshama and Olam Haba is not given a Nisayon, but that's how some want to learn it. That is, Yitzchak, who is acting the opposite of his Gevurah, and plead for us. But of course, if you think about this, acting the opposite of your Mida is in itself what Gevurah is. Isaiah Gibor, a Kovesh at Yitzchak, to conquer your inclination. So for Avram to overcome his loving kindness and be willing to slaughter Yitzchak as an act of Gevurah, Yitzchak to overcome his Gevurah and plead for the undeserving is also an act of Gevurah. So in effect, Yitzchak acting against his Mida is fully consistent with his Mida, but that itself is an expression of Gevurah. So in this sense we see that either one way, that Yitzchak the doctor pleads for the undeserving, or Yitzchak forces himself to plead for the undeserving. It's a very, very interesting to know that on one level, Yitzchak will be the one that will ultimately be in the Rabbi's kiss at the house. Again, the Midrashim will mean it to play. Another Midrash says, Rachel will be the one, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know exactly which one, or both, or when, or different kinds. But Yitzchak does have a role in that sense. Oh yes, there's another difficult thing that you raised a very important question. That is, in last week's parsha, there were really two different transactions that were taken care of, right? One day they got, when Yaakov was 15 years old, because Esav and Yaakov purchased the Bechorah, the right of firstborn, the privilege of the firstborn from Esav. By the way, people say, well, gee, isn't Yaakov taking advantage of Esav? Esav is starving, and Yaakov kind of says, sell me the Bechorah and I'll give you something to eat. You know, some person learned, when it says, Esav sold the Bechorah to Yaakov, the Yaakov Nasan of Esav, they interpret Yaakov Nasan not as a simple past, but what we call in English a past perfect, meaning the way you translate it is, and Yaakov had given to Esav, meaning, but Yaakov did not barter for the Bechorah until after he fed Esav first. Because otherwise, a simple past in biblical Hebrew is always expressed in the future tense of the verb. In other words, it should have said, Vayitain Yaakov lo Esav, Lechem in the Zid Adashim. But it doesn't say, Vayitain Yaakov lo Esav, because Yaakov Nasan lo Esav. So in that sense at least, in that sense, is a blessing to the soul, or it's going through his mind That's not what he told his father. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to tell his father even then, because that would have raised a lot of questions. His father would have said, what do you mean he took your bechor? You sold it? So that's why it says, it's very good, I don't have the first part of it. That's why it says, by Yomer twice. In other words, by Yomer he said to his father, is there any other bracha? Then it says, by Yomer he tricked me twice, because by second by Yomer he's not talking to Yitzchak, he's talking to himself. But what was this bechor that we're talking about? So it seems, we're not talking about the right of inheritance to get a double portion, because Yitzchak wasn't aware of that, that would be irrelevant. But it seems to be the right before Matan Torah, the right of divine service, of bringing korbanos, of acting as a kohen, was a prerogative that was reserved for the firstborn in the family. And in fact, that existed even after Matan Torah for a short while, until the Chol Ta'ova, until the sin of the golden calf, when the bechoros lost that merit and it was given to the kohanim. So what Yaakov is purchasing, not really purchasing, but through the transaction, is showing that he's the more deserving. That's really what it is. He's showing that he brought this chesamoda. But the question I don't have a very good answer for is that this doesn't seem to fit very well. In other words, if we assume, in other words, is the schus of the avoda different than the blessing of Avram? If we assume that the blessing of Avram, he was going to get from Yitzchak, even without Yitzchak knowing that Yaakov had purchased the bechorah, so what dimension is the bechorah? I mean, the bechorah is officially the capacity to bring korbanos, etc. But is that somehow distinct from carrying on the heritage?
I'm not confused next.
What?
There's the bechorah.
Right.
There's the Yaakov Avraham.
What?
And there's the bracha that Yitzchak's doing here with
Thank you. What is that?
I forgot.
What are you doing?
It's
it's courage, no. It's like plowing. Because plowing is also to make the... pruning.
Didn't we have a pruning something where... Didn't we have a thing that we were discussing pruning?
Yeah, but that was to... Yeah, that was... What, that was to... That was pruning a tree.
Right.
So that comes under... No, that was like a Soraya. But here you're not talking about a tree, you're talking about the soil itself. So improving the soil would come under Choresh. And look what it says, Imliapos esakarka kol shehen. What does that mean? There is no minimum shear. It's any amount. Why is it any amount? Because here, if you're trying to improve the soil, then it comes under Choresh.
Totally,
and Choresh, we saw in the Mishnah, is a kol shehu. So it comes out as follows. If the malacha that we're discussing is kotzer, then there is a shear. What the shear is depends on why you're being kotzer. If you're kotzer for human consumption, it's a grogeris. For animal consumption, it's kimlo piagdi. If it's for a fuel, then it's a kidei lavasho, beitzo, kala. If, however, your interest is to improve the soil, then it's a completely different malacha. That's choresh, and choresh is a koshinu. So, but that's the end of the brisa. So now the Gemara asks the following question. Atu kulhu lo liyapos esakarka ninhu? Aren't they all coming to improve the soil? What is the Gemara asking? In other words, Lamaisa, a guy goes unless he wants to eat it. But when he goes and he cuts it off, and we know it's grogeris, right? So Gemara is asking, what do you mean? But won't he be improving the soil when he...
I don't think so, really.
The premise of the Gemara is that he would be. Mm-hmm. Now, if he would be, so what's Gemara getting? That's what Gemara wants. So why is it a kol shehu? Why does the Brisa say that if you're going in to eat it, it's a grogeris?
Yeah, but because then that means then all kol, then it shouldn't be anything it's such as kol, everything should be choresh.
Yeah, because before you get to kol, so you already violated choresh. So you eat, right? You can't get to it yet. By the time, the moment you do a drop, you're choresh already. When you get to a grogeris, maybe then you're kosher too. But the point though is, why do you have to wait until you get to a grogeris to be chayiv? Let's say to be chayiv a korban, you should be chayiv a korban chatov as if you did it b'shogeg. Let's talk about a case of shogeg. You should be chayiv a korban chatov the moment you started, because you're choresh immediately. So, one's asking a kash on the brisa. How do you ever get a case that you have to wait until he is... until he cuts off a grogeris, or let's say kimlo pi hagadi, or kedei levashel beitz akala. How do you even get such a case? The guy should be chayiv the moment he does a kol shehu, because in all these cases, he will be improving the soil, so there should be choresh. Of course, what's going to be the answer? What do you think the answer is going to be? A davar she'ena miskaven.
The first
one. Okay, now let's skip a little. Let me just do this tonight. Skip a line. Just skip one line. Abayomar afilu tema besoda delav agam. Okay, we don't have to go into this. I just skipped a line, so that's why I'm just gonna just skip this. We're not gonna discuss this. Ukigon delo kamachaven. Abay answered that what does this mean? Why is it that, so where do you need a shear? Let's say a grogeris or in a case, the lo kamachav. What do you mean, the lo kamachav? He had no kavana to do what?
Just liyafos as a person.
Yeah. Now, if I'm going in because I'm hungry, I want to eat. So I'm going in to eat. If you ask why am I going in there, I'm going in because I want to eat the food. What about improving the soil? I'm not thinking about that now. That's not my intention. So it's a davar shein on miskaving. So since it's a davar shein on miskaving, so for what malach am I chayiv when I go in there to eat the food? Kotzer. So kotzer, you're not chayiv until you reach a grogeris. So you're not chayiv for choresh. What's the problem? But this is a what?
It's
next kasha. Who cares whether it was your kavana or not? Even if it's not your kavana, but the point though is you know that you'll be improving the soil. Okay. When you pull it off, when you pull it out of the ground, that's improving the soil. So it's a psegreshe, and what did Abai and Rava both tell us according to Rabbi Shimon? That a psegreshe is usr. So if it's usr, before the problem is back on again, you should be chayiv for a kol, even before you get to a grogeris. You should be chayiv for a kol shehu. So here this answer is an extremely important answer. Lo tzricha de ka'ovid ba'ara de chavrei.
not his land.
It's not his land. Well, whose land is it?
Friend's.
His neighbor's.
He doesn't care about improving his friend's land.
Exactly. Now, this is a very important answer. So what it means is, he is not, the case is talking, where he's not doing this in his own field. He's doing it in some neighbor's, a neighbor that he doesn't really care about too much.
If it were his own, though.
If it were his own field, then it would be usur, even... For a koshu. You'd be chayav a korban right off the bat, even for a koshu. But the Bryce is talking in a case where he's not doing it in his own field, he's doing it in his neighbor's field. Now why does that matter?
You have
no benefit.
You don't care about...
But is it going to happen? Is it a psegreshe?
Yeah, but the benefit.
Okay, here the Gemara introduces, you're right, that psegreshe, when you talk about a psegreshe, you can't just discuss psegreshe. You got to discuss something else too. Now, the Gemara doesn't use those words, but Rishonim use the following words, nichole or lo nichole. Nichole means pleasing. Is it a psegreshe which is nichole, which is pleasing to him, or is it lo nichole? Pleasing means, do I get something out of it? Do I get a benefit from it? See, if I went into my own field, now even though I'm going in to eat, and right now I'm not thinking about improving the soil, but the fact that the soil will be improved, that's a benefit to me. It's my field. If my soil is improved, I'm happy about that. So that would be called a psegreshe denichole. However, I'm just giving just the terminology. But if I go into my neighbor, a neighbor that I don't, not a close friend of mine, not my relative, not someone that I like, right? Just a neighbor that I don't know about and I don't care about. If I go into his field and I start pulling these things out, it's true. I went in because I'm hungry. My neighbors let me in to come in to take food to eat. So I go in. Am I thinking about improving the soil? Not at all. So then, what? That's called a psegreshe delo nicholei. Now what do you see from this Gemara? What is the din for a psegreshe de nicholei? To put only as it, well, who can tell me now? How does this answer the problem?
The answer is lo nicholei is mutter.
Do we know that it's mutter? What exactly do we know?
According to Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's...
No, but Rabbi Shimon, we hold the word.
Rabbi
Shimon. Yeah, because we're talking about, we're assuming that a Darush and Miskav would normally be mutter, right? But this is a psegreshe. Now, if it's a psegreshe,
it seems like it's winter, or it's like there's less restrictions. In other words, the aspect that is.
Well, what we are trying is it.
If he's
okay.
doing this in his friend's field.
Yeah, what is it then? Is it
then
correct?
It's okay.
Completely okay?
Well, in other words, he's. And I'll tell you,
no,
which shear for the.
Not talking about less than the shear.
So then it's okay.
Okay, yeah.
Well, when you say to me it's completely mutter.
We don't know that.
What do we know from this Gemara?
It's not as a Doraisa, but it might be as a Doraisa.
That's right. What you know from this Gemara is that it's not as a Doraisa. How do I know that? Because when the whole Gemara here is talking about whether you need the shear or not, or whether it's a kol shehu.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a minimum shear or whether it's a kol shehu, that's a Doraisa issue, right? That's to determine whether there'll be a punishment, whether there'll be skila, or whether there'll be a korban chattis. That's a Doraisa issue. And what we're being told from this Gemara is that if it's a psegreshe delo nichole, then what? Then you're not going to be chayiv for a kol shehu in this case. So what does that tell you? That you're not chayiv for choresh. You will not be chayiv a korban, or you will not be chayiv skila if you did a b'mezid for a kol shehu. Apparently, you see from this that a psegreshe delo nichole is not aser min haTorah. And a psegreshe denich, but what it would be if it is nichole, that it is asur min haTorah. That means if he, like you asked, if he did it in his own field, the moment he did a koshu, if he did it b'shogeg, he chayv a korban chatos. If he did it b'mezid with a warning, he chayv skila. Obviously, it's a nisa d'oraisa. Okay, but if he does it in his neighbor's field, which is a psegreshe delo nichole, it is not asur min haTorah. You will not be chayv a korban for a koshu. That's why when will you be chayv a korban? When will you be chayv a korban or skila? When you reach what? The shear, whatever the shear is. If it's a gro geris. You understand? Because you can't be chayv, because your intention was to eat. So if you want to do kotzer. So then Kotze has a minimum shear. You don't want to do Choresh. Ah, it's going to happen, but it's a psegration to Lo Nichole. If it's Lo Nichole, it's not Asa Min HaTorah.
Still, it's a little strange that this Gemara basically writes off the whole Melacha of Kotze on your own land.
Not that it writes it off.
It's what makes it relevant.
But just that, I guess the question will be, what will be the thing is, if once you do a kosher, you'll be chayav for that,
right.
For Choresh. If you
both.
Continue, you'll be chayav for both.
Oh.
That's all. But the point though is, you'll be chayav for Choresh right off the bat.
Right.
So really what we, it's the very, so really when we've been talking about a psegration, being us according to Rabbi Shimon, we now realize that if it's a psegration, the nicholei, it's also min HaTorah. If it's a psegration to love Nicholai, it is not Asa Min HaTorah. And the big machlokas harishonah that we're going to work on next time, which is based on this Tosfos, is, anybody guess what do you think it would be?
Is it
exactly. A psegration to love Nicholai, granted that it's not Asa Min HaTorah, but is it Asa Min Rabbanan? And this is a big machlokas between the Aruch and other and all other Rishonah. That's what we're, this is really without. This and this segregation, the Lo Nichole, comes up all the time. We're going to give so many examples, things that comes up all the time. And the question is, how do you deal with it? Okay, and we're going to start working on that next week.